You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon, reporting remotely for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Cade Young. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, August 16th, 2021.
When you propose an annexation, you can only shrink it, you can't expand it.
Later in the program, we have the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where we pose questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community issues. More coming up in the bottom half of tonight's program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. Supreme Court will not block Indiana University's mask mandate. WFHB correspondent Robert Robinson has that story. But first, your local headlines.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton revealed that another city employee has tested positive for COVID-19 at the biweekly coronavirus press conference. He said the county is going through a third surge and that the best thing we can do to help fight it is to mask up and get vaccinated.
We know a third surge is happening. We've made that clear, and the data makes it clear that's true in cases, it's true in positivity rates, it's true in hospitalizations. I know we'll get more data on all that. It's even true now in deaths at the state level that we're seeing a significant rise in the average death to COVID as a third surge. It is very frustrating. It's very alarming. We all know that masks and vaccinations are what we need right now. Please do your part.
Indiana University Health President Brian Shockney echoed Mayor Hamilton's call to mask up and get vaccinated. He said IU health hospitalizations due to the coronavirus have surged to their highest numbers since February.
Our numbers of COVID-19 inpatients across the IU Health South Central region during the past week continue to rise to volumes we've not experienced in over 6 months. The numbers of Monroe County between IU Health Bloomington and Monroe Hospital show the same concerning trends. New COVID-19 cases in Indiana have tripled to their highest level since February, where hospitalizations have doubled since that same time. And this trend is evident across the IU Health system, where all of our IU Health hospitals in the state, our COVID-19 census has increased from an average of 60 patients per day in early July to almost 130 patients per day this last week.
The next coronavirus press conference will be on August 27th.
The Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission discussed building an artist studio. At the August 12th meeting, Commissioner and Petitioner Sam DeSolar presented plans to build a two-story artist studio in an empty lot on Morton Street near the B-line. He said the McDowell Gardens neighborhood features a mix of residential and industrial buildings, which he wanted to incorporate into the studio design.
What I've tried to do is, McDowell Gardens is a great neighborhood. It's got a mix of residential buildings and industrial buildings. And this is somewhere in between. It's not a residential building. It's not exactly an industrial building. I'm going to put a bunch of artist studios in this building, one of those artists being me. I'm in the back bit. And then the rest of the building is going to be relegated to other studio spaces and support spaces.
Resident Elizabeth Cox Ash spoke in support of the project. She said the McDowell Gardens neighborhood plan emphasized the importance of spaces like artist studios.
One of the things that was prominent in the neighborhood plan was to have artist studios. That's all over our neighborhood plan. So historically, this is something the neighborhood has wanted.
Commissioner Chris Sturbaum showed concern for the modern design. He suggested the design could represent historic patterns and still have space for the amenities of an artist studio.
I think that you could make an artist studio and get all of the amenities and still blend and coordinate with historic patterns.
commissioners voted to approve the COA 4-0, with Commissioner Sam DeSolar and Chris Sturbaum abstaining.
The Monroe County Solid Waste Management District looked at its 2022 budget. Board member Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked about the metal recycling budget at the August 12th meeting. She wondered if the 2022 metal recycling budget should be higher, considering that spending on it has nearly reached the 2021 budgeted numbers. Executive Director of the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District, Tom McClassen, suggested the market might be inflated due to the coronavirus. He said the board could wait a year and see if the numbers stayed high.
With the how that market fluctuates and not being real sure the impact COVID has had on the market, my thought is that prices went up due to some of the challenges with getting materials in from overseas. So scrap became a little more valuable, and I'm not convinced that those rates are going to stay where they are.
Board member Cheryl Munson praised the board's decision to raise the minimum wage for all solid waste management employees. She identified that in 2022, employees would not be making less than $15 an hour.
I think a valuable step by the board to move toward a minimum wage, hourly wage for every employee of $15 an hour. And so 2022 will be the year that we achieve this.
Board members approved the 2022 budget 6-0.
The Bloomington Economic Development Commission discussed issuing notes at the August 11th meeting. Director of the Bloomington Housing Authority, Amber Scobie, presented the request for notes to help acquire and fund renovations at Crestmont Park. She explained the proposed renovations will improve handicap accessibility and help modernize the units.
The renovation will focus a lot on updating some code requirements. You know, building this in the 1960s, there are some things that just don't make sense for a modern family today. Handicap accessibility is a large one, adding more units that are handicap accessible, as well as units that allow for those with hearing or visual impairments.
Commissioners voted to approve the resolution 3-0. The resolution will now move on to the Bloomington City Council for final approval.
On Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed Indiana University to require students to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. WFHB correspondent Robert Robinson has that story.
The Supreme Court rejected a challenge to Indiana University's vaccine mandate policy on Friday, ending a legal battle begun in June. The decision, issued by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, came without explanation or the input of other justices, signaling that the issue was legally uncontroversial. An attorney for the students has said they plan to continue fighting the mandate in the lower courts. The lawsuit, originally filed in June, alleged a wide range of infractions on the part of Indiana University. It claimed violations of Indiana's vaccine passport law, 14th Amendment rights to personal autonomy, bodily integrity, and to reject medical treatment, and the COVID-19 vaccine emergency use authorization requirements of complete, informed, and voluntary consent. The plaintiffs also argued that, for the relatively young population of Indiana University, the risks of receiving the vaccine outweighed the risks of contracting COVID-19. The decisions of lower federal courts were similarly unequivocal. Judge Damon R. Lechte of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Indiana wrote that the students failed to establish a sufficiently compelling 14th Amendment claim or justify the extraordinary remedy of a preliminary injunction. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously affirmed the district court's ruling, again rejecting the 14th Amendment claim. Indiana University is currently mandating vaccines for all students, faculty, and staff in the 2021 academic year. Initially, IU intended to require proof of vaccination, but shifted to a self-reporting system in the wake of controversy surrounding Indiana's vaccine passport law, which prevents local government entities from requiring proof of vaccination. IU has also recently reinstated their indoor masking requirement. For WFHB, I'm Robert Robinson.
And now it's time for A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where we pose questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community issues. In today's segment, WFHB Assistant News Director Jake Jacobson asked the mayor about the city's decision to remove Area 7 from Bloomington's annexation plan and its efforts to renovate Lower Cascades Park. All that and more in today's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Each week, community members and volunteers at WFHB pose questions for Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about local current events. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, Mayor John Hamilton answers some of those questions. So last week, the city announced via its Facebook page that you would be recommending that the city council remove Area 7 from the proposed annexations. Folks that want to see that full press release can find it on the Bloomington, Indiana Office of the Mayor Facebook page, but can you talk a little more about that decision?
Sure. And annexation, you know, is a long process. It shouldn't be 4 years long. It has been, but when we started in 2017, we always knew there would be discussion and review of ideas. And people, I think, know that when you propose an annexation, you can only shrink it. You can't expand it. So you kind of look at the boundaries as they kind of maximum might be. And that Area 7, which is on the far north side of the city, kind of up Walnut as it heads into 69, while it's a really important gateway, and continue to feel that control makes some sense as a gateway. As we got into it more and talking to people and looking to the detailed maps of developable lands and talking to the folks who live there, it came pretty clear that there's very little development opportunity in the areas that were proposed, and there's a lot of city council interest. So that's what the process does. It kind of identifies areas that are less likely and less important, and so we agreed. I recommend, it's really up to the city council, but I expect they'll have an amendment to take that Area 7 away. There's just a couple hundred residents, and again, the vast majority of the land ultimately cannot be developed. And while it's still a bit of a gateway, I think it's the right thing to go ahead and drop that. So that's what I recommended.
It seems like a big part of this decision is just that area would not lend itself well to the sort of development that the city would like to have put there. But you did also, you know, in the press release commented on this too, about just hearing a lot of concerns from county residents and some city council members. Are there other areas of the proposed annexation where you feel like you've heard comparable, public comment, comparable concerns, comparable resistance to annexation for that area?
I wouldn't say anything really quite comparable to 7. We've heard, and now we've had the public hearings, and we continue to get feedback from council members and residents in the proposed areas. There are a couple short streets on the far east side where we've heard residents who are concerned about it. It's a different situation. They're mostly developed, and they're right contiguous to the city, and they're kind of urban neighborhoods. But that's one area that I expect there'll be some interest in. I did not recommend that those be dropped. And then there's literally 3 or 4 parcels that we've heard from on the southeast side, and then nothing particular on the west side, areas 1A and 1B. There are, of course, people who are opposed to the annexation, but not the same kind of focused concern about undevelopable or certain issues like that. So the council will be proposing to hear and consider amendments on August 31st. That's their schedule. And so, you know, they'll be thinking about it. We'll be talking to them, and they'll ultimately, they will have to go through a process of proposed amendments to the annexation ordinances, each area of the eight areas, and then vote on whether they want to change the boundaries. That'll happen, I hope, on the 31st.
As of right now, has the city talked about backing down from any of the other areas like you sort of have recommended with Area 7, or is it pretty much everything that's left right now is the city believes would still be good for annexation?
Well, again, it's up to the city council ultimately to decide that, and I won't speak for them, but from our perspective, from the administration's perspective, we didn't hear really substantial news on other areas that suggested there were major changes appropriate. Now, that's not all done yet. There's discussions happening, and we continue to welcome input. We heard people who just didn't want any annexation to happen, or they said, don't annex my property. But we didn't hear a lot, for example, about, you know, on the west side, change the boundary that from this to that, or on the southwest side, you know, change the boundary this three blocks or something like that. So I know we certainly heard people who didn't want annexation to proceed at all, but ultimately the council will vote on that. But other than a few minor kind of proposed potential amendments, we didn't hear a lot of news about that made us think the annexation proposal is off base. Again, it's a catch-up. It's trying to right-size our city. It's trying to put in boundaries that reflect the way the city's grown over the last 20 years, frankly, and a very important way to make sure we're all part of the city in the future, and the politics and the voting and the participation in the full city life.
Do you think how do you feel about some commenters' assertion that the annexation process as is does not give the people living in the county enough of a voice about the process?
Well, we all can wish the state law were different. I certainly do in different ways. But look, this Indiana state law has a proposal, has a process to annex for cities to grow. It's very detailed, and almost all of the areas that were proposing for annexation are what would be called areas intended for annexation. These were areas in the plans 20 years ago. These were areas that were extended sewers primarily, largely, because of the plan to include them in the urbanized city. And the process could be, and it may be in the future, it will be purely a voluntary process by which a neighborhood or a developer says, we want sewers, and the city says, okay, if you want sewers, you got to be annexed before you get sewers. That's what some jurisdictions do, and that's what a lot of places around the country do. Indiana allowed a process by which you could get sewers before you became part of the city, and you could just agree to become part of the city in the future, which is generally what Bloomington has done. And I get it that 15 years later, or sometimes longer, new homeowners may not be aware that that's in their deed, that they actually agreed to be part of the city, and that's how they got sewers or included in other ways. So, you know, it's not good that the city, before my time, didn't annex anything for 12 years. That kind of put a pig in a python, if you will, a bump, you know, a big slug we have to get through. But that catch-up's really important, and we're following the state law that absolutely gives everyone a right to protest and get involved, but also let the city grow with sewers before we did annexation. That's kind of the underlying issue here is that extension of sewers without an annexation. And that was, frankly, let people have sewers for 5 or 10 or 15 years without being part of the city. And now we're asking them to join in.
A listener wonders, the new Lower Cascade Steam Bank stabilization and trail construction is finally underway. The road through Lower Cascades is currently closed off, and the waterfall shelter remains closed as well. They wanted to know, what will this project look like once it's complete?
Great question, and we're very excited about the improvements in Cascades. Lower Cascades, the oldest and a really beautiful city park. There are several things going on. One, there will be an accessible trail that's going to be built up to the waterfall, so that's going to really help more people enjoy that wonderful little spur up to the waterfall on the west side of the creek. In addition, as you referenced, stream stabilization, there's some issues with the bank stabilization there. That's some of that stuff dates from the Depression era, the 1930s WPA work, and needs to be updated and improved. That stream continues to erode. And then, of course, the road surface itself actually got washed out in mid-June with our big floods. We had some collapsing of the road, so that's why the road is still closed. And, you know, we did a pilot on making it pedestrian-only. We're going to kind of tweak that and try it with some car access, slower, different ways. I continue to think we need to evolve that park into the great, great park it can be. It's really beautiful, and I encourage people to get down there. You can walk on that roadway now or bike on it without cars. It's really, I encourage folks to get down there. But it's a whole range of improvements, and there's more detail if you want on the Parks Department website.
Do you have questions for Mayor John Hamilton? Send them in an email to news@wfhb.org titled Questions for the Mayor. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
Next, WFHB correspondent Tilly Robinson provides an update on rising COVID-19 numbers across the state and in Monroe County. We turn to Robinson for more.
COVID-19 cases in Monroe County are still rising. Data from the New York Times reported Wednesday shows Monroe County's 7-day average case count at 24 new COVID-19 cases each day. That represents a 53% increase in cases over the past 2 weeks. The state of Indiana's 7-day average for COVID-19 cases had increased to nearly 2,000 cases yesterday, which is a 143% increase over the past 2 weeks. In response to the uptick, local health officials have reinstated a mask mandate. All Monroe County residents are required to wear face coverings in indoor public spaces. The order went into effect last Thursday and is expected to stay in place until at least September 30th. The Monroe County Board of Health met again on Monday. Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill said that an array of precautions continue to be necessary.
I do believe that if we can get people to continue to vaccinate, mask, practice all the various layers of prevention, use every tool that we have in our toolbox that we can curb this. But the Delta variant is definitely much easier to spread. That's really what seems to be what we're seeing in Indiana the most.
Indiana University is also once again requiring masks inside campus buildings. Area school districts have responded to the rise in COVID-19 numbers as well. On July 27th, the Board of the Monroe County Community School Corporation approved changes to this year's reentry plan.
All those in favor of the motion to approve the reentry plan adjustment as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
In the adjusted plan, MCCSC announced that students and unvaccinated staff will be required to wear masks in school buildings. The Richland Bean Blossom School District had previously planned to make masking optional. But in an email last week, RBB Superintendent Jerry Sanders announced that masks would be required for all students and staff. So far, only one Monroe County school, Seven Oaks Classical School, has announced that it plans to violate the county mask mandate. The Ellettsville Charter School will not require masks nor encourage vaccinations. The most recent COVID-19 update from the Indiana State Department of Health was live-streamed on July 30th. State Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box said that guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now encourages masking indoors once again.
This week, the CDC issued new guidance recommending that everyone age 2 and older wear a mask in public indoor settings in areas with substantial or high transmission of COVID-19, even if they're fully vaccinated. The Indiana Department of Health is strongly urging Hoosiers to follow this guidance. This also applies to students, staff, and teachers in our K-12 schools, regardless of the level of community spread.
Dr. Box also said that individuals who are close contacts of someone with COVID-19 should get tested, regardless of their vaccination status. She emphasized the increased risk posed by the Delta variant of the coronavirus.
The biggest threat is from the Delta variant, which is fueling our current increase in cases. This variant, which was first identified in India, spreads more than twice as easily from one person to another compared with other strains. The CDC has compared the infectivity of the Delta variant to that of the chickenpox and measles, which means that each infected person can infect an average of 8 or 9 other people.
The Delta variant now accounts for almost 83% of COVID-19 tests sequenced in Indiana. Indiana Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lindsay Weaver explained that although vaccines are not perfect, they are still a vital tool in fighting the coronavirus.
I want to stress that breakthrough infections for vaccinated people are still very low and tend to be mild. But we are finding that they are more likely with the Delta variant than they are with any of the other strains that we have seen. No vaccine is 100%. We hear every year from people who have received the flu vaccine but still get the flu. But vaccines do prevent many cases of illness and are especially effective at preventing hospitalizations and deaths.
Dr. Box also highlighted the importance of widespread vaccination.
Until we increase our vaccination rates, and unless we use every tool available to us to stop the spread of disease, this virus will continue to have the advantage. It will continue to mutate, and we will be constantly playing whack-a-mole for the foreseeable future. I personally do not want to play games with Hoosiers' lives.
As of Monday's Monroe County Board of Health meeting, the vaccination rate in Monroe County was 57.5% of eligible residents. For more vaccine information, visit ourshot.in.gov. To register for a free COVID-19 test, visit coronavirus.in.gov and navigate to the testing information page. The Indiana Department of Health will livestream its next COVID-19 update tomorrow on YouTube. For WFHB, I'm Tilly Robinson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Robert Robinson and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jake Jacobson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. For WFHB, this is your engineer and executive producer, Cade Young.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast online at WFHB.org.
The WFHB Local News is also available as a podcast. Just search our call letters, WFHB, wherever you find your podcasts. Subscribe to never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news at WFHB.org. You can become a WFHB Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB Local News Archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,